Well, the children will be heading back to school soon, and there will be all kinds of issues that parents will have to deal with. Anything from dawdling to bullies and a whole lot more in between. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you listening in today. Our guests today have some well-tested advice for dealing with those kinds of issues. Myrna Scheer back with us. She is a development psychologist from Drexel University and creator of social emotional learning programs for children and the problem-solving approach to discipline. Her books include Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, now in its second edition. We also have Nancy Schultz with us. She's a human development and family relationship educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension. She's also a national trainer for the I Can Problem Solve and Raising a Thinking Child programs. So what concerns do you have about your children, or maybe your grandchildren or your neighbor's kids, about them going back to school? I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Nancy Schultz, good to have you with us again. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here with you, Larry.
And Myrna Scheer, welcome back. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Larry. I'm really excited to be talking with you again.
Remind us about the basic concepts behind raising a thinking child.
Well, what's different about our approach to child rearing is that we involve the child in solving their own problems. And we teach them the skills so that they can do that as early as preschool. And by the time they reach the elementary school grades, they're able to cope with some of the typical problems that come up, especially those that are really prevalent today, such as kids who are being bullied or, you know, trying to make friends and having trouble, maybe feeling rejected, having trouble with their schoolwork. These all cause stresses. And parents often tend to suggest or tell kids, you know, what they should do if somebody's teasing them or calling them names or rejecting them. And the kids aren't really taught how to think about what they're doing, and as a result, often are not successful. So we have what we call a problem-solving approach to parenting.
Are parents able to adopt this program pretty easily?
At first, they find it difficult because parents are used to, you know, suggesting, you know, how to solve a problem or telling them what they're doing is wrong and even explaining why. The parent is doing all the thinking and all the talking for the child. And by not involving the child in the conversation, after a while, they tune out. And then they don't listen, and they've heard those suggestions and explanations 1,000 times. And, you know, the parent gets exacerbated and may even, you know, yell and make commands. And all of this just leaves the child frustrated. But when they start what we call dialoguing, involving the child in the conversation, and we have specific ways to do that, then they see how the child responds, and after a while it becomes second nature. And they'll say to me something like, I don't know how I ever talked any other way to my child, when they see how they respond. It's really very rewarding.
Yeah. Nancy Schultz, you've been teaching this program for a bit. What has been the response from parents who use it?
My response from the parents is once they grasp the dialogue concept of really having a strong dialogue with their child, they really are like, wow, I wish I would have had this a long time ago. So they really like using the approach. And, in fact, some parents will say, like, after, like, 2-3 weeks into the program, they're like, wow, I can see the impact it's already starting to make in our child's life just by using this approach. So they do a lot of activities in the book, Raising a Thinking Child workbook, that provide them with, like, a lot of concrete interactive activities that help them to really learn how to solve people problems that are important to them now. But then that also kind of paves that way for those problems that they'll be facing later in life.
That's pretty cool. Could you, Nancy or Myrna, for that matter, could you give an example of one of those that you mentioned that are discussed in the book?
Well, for example, let's say a preschool child is hitting another child. Very often to the parent, hitting is the problem. And they start telling the child, you know, not to hit. They might say, you know, you should talk to him. You should ask him for what you want. You know, if you hit him, he might hit you back. And to the child, that's not the problem. Hitting is the solution to what the real problem is to him. So we ask the child, what's wrong? What's the matter? Why are you hitting? Not in an accusatory why, but a genuine information-seeking tone of voice. And the child might say, he took my toy and he won't give it back. Now the problem is very different. Well, what happened when you hit him? Asking them to think of the potential of what actually happened, the consequence. Well, he hit me back. Well, how did that make you feel? That's very important to ask a child how he is feeling, because if he doesn't think anyone cares about his feelings, he can't possibly develop empathy and care about others. So once he feels comfortable talking about his feelings, then we ask, well, how do you think, you know, Johnny felt when you hit him? And that's the beginning of empathy thinking. Well, you're mad and he's mad. Can you think of a different way to get your toy back that's different from hitting so he won't hit you back? Now the child is the active participant, not a passive recipient of explanations and suggestions. And that's a very important technique because it helps the child open up. It makes him associate, you know, his thinking skills with what he's doing. He's an active participant. He won't tune out. He has to listen because he's participating. And children as early as 3 and 4 can do this with age-appropriate problem situations.
That's a great example. Another example, one that I was thinking about, somebody brought up with me, just sort of in frustration about dawdling in the morning of a couple of kids. And fortunately for me, my daughters have been, you know, really pretty good about it. They get up and get going, but or they did. But dawdling can be kind of a frustrating thing in the morning. And changing that behavior would be very useful to at least a couple of people I know.
Well, Nancy, you've experienced that, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I had a woman in one of my classes a couple of years ago that had a son that he always would get up in the morning and he dawdled. So the very first class that we had together, she goes, I'm really frustrated because he constantly dawdles, and then I start raising my voice, and then he starts going into a temper tantrum. And so it becomes a no-win situation, and the kids end up missing the bus. And she goes, I really need some help with this. So we started looking at some of the techniques and material from Myrna's book called Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, about dawdling. And one of the suggestions was to actually help the child get organized the night before so that they're prepared and it takes a lot of stress off of that day. So engaging your child in making those choices and decisions of how to prep them for that next day will actually give them the tools that they need to be successful. So we talked about, like, what are some of the things he's frustrated about? And she said, well, he would get upset about what clothes he had to wear for school that day or what I had picked out for his breakfast, or he couldn't find his backpack, and so he was constantly running around, and then he would get into these tantrums. So hence, we talked about giving him choices. So she started offering choices to her son and letting him pick out what he would like to have for breakfast, and within reason. And then she also gave him choices, like, of what would you like to wear? Would you like to wear this to school today or that to school today? And then just, like, she really worked with him on helping him get his backpack organized, like, what do you need in your backpack, and where will you put your paper and your pencils and your books? And she said that what ended up happening is that second week when she came back to class, the temper tantrums that she had been experiencing before she started the program and the dawdling actually ended up stopping, and he was not missing the bus anymore. So when we got to the end of an eight-week series, she was just profound. She said he has never had a temper tantrum or is dawdling anymore because he is got himself ready. He's confident. He has made his decisions on what he wants to wear, what he wants to eat, and he gets his backpack ready the night before. And it's taken a lot of stress off of that morning routine. And so she felt it was a really win-win situation for her. Now, I taught this woman 3 years ago, and I happened to run into her not that long ago. And she ran up to me, and she goes, "You know, Nance, I just need to tell you, since I completed this program 3 years ago, we have never had a temper tantrum with this little guy anymore. And what we have found is our household is so much calmer, and the kids are not fighting, there's not yelling happening as much often." And she said, "It's funny because a lot of her friends are like, 'What are you doing that's so different?'" And so she said, one of the things that she strongly encourages for every family to do is to take this program because it has changed their life for good.
Well, I tell you what, we are going to be continuing talking with our two guests today, Myrna Schur. She is the author of Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, and Nancy Schultz of UW Extension. We've got lots more situations that we can talk about and certainly take your questions as well. So I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234. We'll be back right after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. School's coming. You may be ready for your kids to go back to school, but are they ready? Myrna Schur back with us. She's a developmental psychologist from Drexel University, creator of social emotional learning programs for children, and the problem-solving approach to discipline. And her books include Raising a Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, now in its second edition. Nancy Schultz with us as well. She's a human development and family relationship educator with UW Extension. Nancy's also a national trainer for the I Can Problem Solve and Raising a Thinking Child programs. So we're focusing on back-to-school problems, but they can also help you out with other issues that may be affecting you and your child or grandchild. So I hope you'll join in the conversation with your own experiences, questions, or comments. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org as well. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, there's been a heightened awareness. I just want to make sure we get to this on bullying. And Myrna, what can we do to help a child who's being bullied?
Well, just like with the dawdling problem, the whole goal of our approach is to empower, not overpower the child. And when Nancy was talking about how she handled dawdling, and the child is making the decisions, he's really being empowered. And the same with bullying. There's one boy who was 8 years old. He was in third grade, and he was bullied because he was very overweight, and the kids called him Bacon, Bacon. And, you know, he would go home crying, and the mother would say, well, tell him you don't like it, or tell the teacher, or walk away. And you know, she was giving him all these ideas on how he should solve the problem. And every day he would still come home, you know, with Mommy, they called me Bacon again today. And he was getting more and more frustrated, and the parent was too. And when they got to the part of the curriculum in the school, they used the I Can Problem Solve, and he got into thinking of alternative solutions. How can I solve this problem? He came up with the idea of responding. So the next day they go, "Bacon, bacon," and he says, "Yeah," and "I sizzle, I sizzle." and they laughed, and they saw him in a whole new light. You know, they saw him as a weakling, and weaklings are very often the ones that are teased and bullied, and they didn't see him that way. And 4 years later now, this child is very popular, doing well in school, and is knows how to cope with this kind of, you know, attack. And again, the child was doing the thinking, not the parent.
Yeah, that's a great, great story. Yeah, I want to go back to the books a bit, because I'm sure people listening are wondering, well, what about these books, and can I use these books myself?
Mm-hmm. Well, the books are all available from Research Press. Well, not Raising a Thinking Child. That they have to get on Amazon because it was published in 1995. But I Can Problem Solve is for classrooms, for schools, and it's for preschool, kindergarten in the primary grades, and intermediate elementary grades, and that can be obtained from either Amazon or Research Press, researchpress.com. Or they can call 1-800-519-2707. And Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, the second edition, is also available on Kindle from Amazon. It's about more than 100 situations that parents of 4 to 12-year-olds face, typical everyday problems, and they also can get that from Research Press. Those books are not in bookstores. They have to go either to Amazon.com or Research Press.
Nancy Schultz, I wonder about what happens if it's the boy or the girl who is doing the bullying. Have you had that kind of experience in any of the teaching that you've done?
For each situation, each one is very... each child will have, be it a boy or a girl, they will feel those very similar feelings of like, okay, this is really hard. And what typically a girl, it might be a situation where she's being excluded from a group. And that's very hard for girls when they get into a situation like that. And so just helping the child by actually having them talk about their feelings, telling you what happened and how that made them feel, and why do you think this happened in this situation, and then asking that child what can they do to help the situation. So like, what could they do to resolve the situation? And often what we encourage parents to do is come up with more than, you know, have the child come up with many solutions. And then ask, like, what might happen if you choose that solution? And then actually getting them to take responsibility of, like, coming up with that solution, because if they come up with that solution, they're more likely to follow through.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What?
You know, actually, I talked to a 12-year-old boy who was the bully, and I asked him why he had a need to talk to kids and behave the way he was, and he said, "I don't have any friends." And I said, "Well, do you think tormenting other kids will help you make friends?" And he said, "Yeah, they'll have to pay attention to me." And I said, "Well, what happens when you do that?" And he said, they avoid me. Well, what can you, you know, then we talked about how it makes him feel, very important question. And then, well, can you think of a way that you can think of so that they won't avoid you? And he said, well, maybe I could try to be their friend. And the parent told me that one dialogue changed his behavior in school.
Wow.
In other words, instead of telling him what to do, she asked him to think about what he could do.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of all kinds of issues here. Another issue that faces parents is when their child doesn't pay attention or tunes out to what's being said.
That's because the parent is probably doing all the talking and all the thinking by suggesting and explaining and, not really engaging the child and participating in the conversation.
Do you think social media, and I mean, even at that younger age, if that I can think of my own daughter once in a while. I'll say something to her, but she's on her telephone. She's on her smartphone, and she doesn't hear me right away. And that probably happens to every parent at one point or another. But what do you think about social media and the issues that it might be creating for kids and going back, even going back to school?
Nancy, do you want to respond to that, or you want me to?
Sure, I'll give it a stab here. A lot of times, you know, one of the typical situations that we might run into is where a child is needing to get their homework done, and they're on their iPad playing a game, and so they're really intense into that iPad game. And typically, as parents, what we want to do is, like Myrna said, we start raising our voices and tell them to get off their game and get to their work. And that doesn't work. So some of the things that we've talked with parents about is actually thinking about the questions they ask their child. Like, here's a scenario about doing homework, like where the parent could ask, like, what subjects do you have to work on tonight for your homework? Oh, it's going to make the child stop and think. And so hence, after the child responds what kind of homework they have, then they can ask, like, what do you want to do first?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In other words, planning. The child plans the day. You can mm-hmm. do it visually and draw a calendar with the time of the day. And, again, they're much more likely to do their homework if they plan when they're going to do it and not the parent.
Yeah.
What it sounds like common sense, but it isn't, I guess, because parents don't do it.
Well, I'm lucky that way because my daughter, who has a very busy life, the first thing she does when she comes home is to work on her homework because she wants
it. It's her choice, right?
Yeah, it's her choice. She wants it out of the way, I think. And then when she's done with it, then she can enjoy maybe a television program or maybe play a game on her phone or whatever it is. But she knows, I guess she understands that she has to get that work done. And so
that's the point. That's the key, Larry, right there. She understands. And she's just not told, you have to do your homework before you can watch TV.
No.
See the difference?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. yeah, I never have to say anything like that. So I'm lucky that way. But other problems, and again, we'll join in. I'm surprised we haven't had some callers on this, but the conversation's going along well, so I don't mind. 1-800-642-1234 if you want to chime in with an experience of your own or a question of your own. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sometimes, you know, it happens that it's one parent who becomes the disciplinary in a household. How important do you think it is for both parents to be involved in discipline, and how do you use what you're talking about here in when it comes to discipline?
Well, Nancy, you've worked with families where only the mother participated.
Yeah.
And families where both.
Yeah, so what we often have is moms will sign up for the program and dads don't think that they need to sign up for this.
Or they feel they don't have time, I guess.
Yeah, and so what we find out a lot of times, and this happens quite frequently, where we'll have the mom will go home and she'll be working on the problem-solving approach with the child, and the dad is overhearing and seeing what's happening, and they become intrigued with what is happening and the change in the relationship happening between the mom and the child. And I don't know how many times I've had moms call me and say, you know, is it okay if the father joins us in the sessions? And I'm like, absolutely, because when both parents are involved in learning the problem-solving approach, it really does help reinforce the lessons that the kids are learning. They're not getting mixed signals from both parents. They're actually grasping this a lot quicker. We know that moms are really, it's important to have moms involved, but it really is significant when dads can get involved also. And we know that when dads are actively involved in the child's activities and are setting time aside each day to make a point to be engaged with the child is a lot more happier, and they take a pride.
You know, I have a great little anecdote of a father who wasn't participating, and the child was a 2-year-old who was around when her 4-year-old sister was learning the skills with the mother, and the 2-year-old bit the father. Well, you can imagine what the father was about to do. And the mother said, "Just a minute, before you spank her, let me ask her a question." And she said to the 2-year-old, "Can you think of a different way to tell your father what you want?" And the 2-year-old hugged her father, and the father was so shocked he couldn't spank her.
Oh!
But we have, in our research, we have found that when only one parent is participating, the child still, his behavior really does improve because he is able to, you know, think internally how to cope with the world. And when children are trained at school and not at home and the parents don't know how to, what we call dialogue, the children's behavior does change in school. So it's pretty powerful. It's obviously better if all the adults in his life can be problem-solving teachers, but that's not realistic.
John in Middleton, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, John. What's on your mind?
We have got a question about feeding a 3-year-old. There seems to be a lot of forced play going on. The child doesn't eat, and then the parents force food down their throat.
Oh, boy.
You know, there's research that shows if you put various foods in front of a child and let that child choose, which is very compatible with our approach, let the child choose, they often will choose the healthy foods over the non-healthy foods. And if you, that's something you might try, is just lay the foods in front of the child and just smile and don't say anything. And let the child, you know that he or she can choose the food. And that might be a potential solution to that problem.
Yeah, that's a great idea. John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, we were talking about both parents being involved. A lot of times, you know, what, 40% of the time we have single-parent homes? Something, I don't know what the percentage is. That may be way off. But I know there are a lot of single-parent households. What about in single-parent households?
Well, that's a problem in itself, and the child might be missing the other parent. But talk to the child about how he feels. You know, I had a father of a 10-year-old who said, you know, before I have a book called also Raising a Thinking Preteen for parents of 8 to 12-year-olds, I took parents through that book, and the father said, you know, I used to tell him how I feel. I talked about feelings, but it never occurred to me to ask him how he feels. And that, I thought, was really interesting because, again, the father was telling and explaining and doing all the thinking. Ask the child how he feels about it. And then whatever the child says, you go from there. If he says, you know, he really misses his father, say, well, what can we do today to help you feel better? Let the child tell you, not, well, you know, let's go to the park and play with the dogs there or something. I mean, I made that up, obviously.
Yeah.
But you know, instead of suggesting what to do to feel better, let the child tell you what, you know, let's think about all the things we can do today that make us feel good. And, you know, that, again, is getting into his feelings, which that's the part that's so important. They have to know that somebody cares about how they feel and that they come to care how they feel before they can solve problems.
You know, this program is being offered through UW Extension. Nancy Schultz, maybe you can talk about that for a bit. How can listeners find out if it's being offered near them?
Sure. All the caller needs to do is call the local UW Extension office in their county. Now, it might not be available there, but it might be available in a county adjacent to theirs. They might be able to help. If they are not able to help, they can actually reach out to me, and I will provide you that number. Okay. It is 715-701-6028.
So that number is 715-701-6028.
Mm-hmm.
I got that right? 715-701-6028.
That is correct.
All right. So I wanted to make sure we got that in before we ran out of time. You've been teaching this program for a long time.
Started in 1971.
Wow. Uh-huh. That is a long time. I know you've had a lot of experiences, but before we go to that, Nina emailed to say that sometimes her son is being too physical or too silly to listen to her questions or respond, or gives a really quick off-the-cuff response and won't reflect. What do you do when they're kind of being too silly?
Well, when kids get silly, I just say to them, oh, you're just teasing me. And then I say, I bet if you think real hard, you can... you know, tell me whatever the answer to the question is. And kids do, you know, tease and get silly sometimes. But instead of getting angry or yelling at them or saying, if you're going to act like that, we're not going to do this, or any kind of negative talk, just say, oh, you're just teasing. I bet if you think real hard, you can fill in the blanks. And kids are shocked. By the way, when kids are asked for their ideas and to solve a problem, they're shocked. They're not used to being asked. They're used to being told and explained or yelled at or whatever, or given time out, in which case they're thinking about how to get even with the little brat who got them in trouble, if they're thinking at all. You know? And it's just, they're shocked. And that alone, a four-year-old came running home from nursery school and said, Mommy, I solved a problem today, with the greatest pride in her voice. And it's amazing how that really changes behavior.
That's great. And they say some funny things once in a while. I had a show on earlier for the guy from our Wisconsin, and talked about a woman who stopped at a traffic light, and in the car was her three-year-old, and she says... So the woman said to the little girl, can you tell me what color the light is now? And the little girl said, holy cow, you're driving and you don't know your colors?
Oh, that's funny. It's like when you ask kids, do you like red or blue? And they say,
oh, well, on that note, we have to close. Myrna and Nancy.
Could I just give my website real quick?
Absolutely. Pop, that's what I was going to ask.
Oh, well, see, we think alike, Larry. It's www.thinkingchild, one word, thinkingchild.com.
Thinkingchild.com. Myrna, thanks so much. Nancy, thank you as well. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry, and have a great rest of the summer, and I hope to talk to you again one day.
You will. Thanks, Myrna. Thanks, Nancy. Myrna Schur, author of Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, Nancy Schultz, human development and family research educator with Extension. And thank you for listening. Stay with us.